always have these rigged for guys' shirts. Luckily, I remembered it. It comes loose. All right. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for having me. And it's my prayer today that something that I will say will be a help to you. And that is my prayer. Come on in. There are several still trickling in. I know what I want to say, but I'm not quite sure what the Lord might want to say through me, and I'm trying to be open to that. If you happened to be at Memorial Drive last night, we talked about suffering and allowing yourself to even be embarrassed or what have you, and allowing the Lord to use you because you're willing to do that. I hope that He doesn't allow me to get too embarrassed today. I want to give you a quick overview of what I want to do today so that you will kind of have a general outline and know where I'm going, and then we'll get right into it. What I want to start off with today, and let me tell you this, that this is a little different than what I'm used to doing. I'm a little uncomfortable with it. I love to teach. I love to teach women. I love to teach from a text. I love a textual study. But that's not what I'm doing today, and that's why it's uncomfortable. Today I'm trying to share myself, a lot of my life, and a lot of my pilgrimage with you. And so therefore, what I'm doing today is not opening a text with you and dissecting it. It is sharing with you how I've progressed and hope that it will help you in some way. What I'm going to start off with is part of my story, and stop that at a particular point in my life and fill in then with some information that I want to share with you. And then I want to pick up the story and continue it from there. I want to walk around, but I haven't figured out how to do it yet. Let me start with my story. Some of you in here know me. Most of you don't. But I was one of those people that we in our Christian ease call raised in the church. Okay? Born to Christian parents, lived several different places in my early childhood, but about the time I was 8, I believe, my father received a transfer that plopped us right here in Tulsa, right in the middle of the Bible Belt. And so I finished my growing up here in Tulsa. So I really was raised right here at the urgence of my father. I was baptized at the Memorial Drive congregation when I was 12. I continued there under the tutelage of various teachers and youth ministers and friends and family that were there. When I was only 16, but about to be a senior in high school, I was always young for my grade, a young man entered my life. He had just graduated from high school, and he was on his way to Oklahoma Christian, OCC at the time, to major in Bible. Well, the rest is history, but the history is this. I did my senior theme the next year on the life of a minister's wife, because I think I kind of already knew the direction that this relationship was going. And sure enough, I followed him to Oklahoma Christian the next year. By Thanksgiving, we were engaged. By the following Christmas, we were married. And yes, if you add that up real quick, I was just barely 19 years old. Ask my mom. I had done work quickly at Oklahoma Christian, was able to graduate in 3 years. We graduated together. We did finish our degrees there. But what I'm trying to get said is from the moment I left home, I went to Oklahoma Christian, I was married within a year and a half, and from that point on, I was the wife of a minister, part-time or full-time, from the time I was 19 years old. And basically, except for very few months, have been ever since. I knew that through several of those years that there was a lacking, a longing in my life. We did ministry several places. We were in Oklahoma City. We ended up in the Fort Worth area for about 10 years. But I always knew that I did not have the confidence in my salvation that people talked about having and that we were supposed to have. I knew that I didn't have the passion for service that I was supposed to have. I know there's a lot of supposed to's here, but I knew that so much of my life was what I wanted to do, but the passion wasn't there. There was this duty kind of feeling that I could never really shirk. Even my attendance at worship was just what I was expected to do, and although I had no problem with doing that, I was basically a fairly compliant kid, compliant teenager, never really went through a tremendous rebellion. My mom may beg to disagree, but I don't think that I did. So for years and years and years, there was this lacking, this feeling of duty that I had been taught really shouldn't be there. I should want to serve, and I should want to worship, and I should want, you know, this was the way it was supposed to be. But I could never figure out why that just really wasn't true of me. And I asked many questions, and no one could ever seem to quite give me an answer. What I want to share with you today is about having your own faith. Because I came to learn that this was really what the problem was and what the key has been for me. I can take no credit for the information part that I'm about to share with you now. It comes from various sources. I will name a couple of books and authors if they will help you. The basic information about faith stages or styles that I'm about to share with you comes from a book called Will Our Children Have Faith? John Westerhoff is the author. At a later point, I also read Lynn Anderson's book, If I Really Do Believe, Why Do I Have All These Doubts? It's a long title. He actually used Westerhoff's material as well, just kind of expanded on it. These men, and again, these are men's ideas, but they really, really helped me and make a lot of sense to me. They are these. They basically present the idea that there are four different styles or stages of our faith. Now, there's nothing written in stone about this. It doesn't mean that you're always in one, that this is true for everybody, all those kinds of disclaimers. But I think you will see a definite progression here as I talk about them. You know, faith in general is many things. But I do believe, as you've probably been taught, that it is more than just a belief in something. Faith in something is a belief that moves you to action. Faith is a response to something that you know in your head. Faith is a feeling at times, but it is thinking, it is a choice at times, and it is a response. Let's talk about these four stages or styles. First of all, as Westerhoff would call it, there is what's called experienced faith. Now think about it for a minute. When children are the very youngest, and this isn't the only time it happens, I'll talk about that in a moment, but when children are the very youngest, infancy, early childhood, what they are actually, their faith is really not faith. They really don't even have a faith of their own as such, but what they are doing is experiencing the faith around them. If they're part of a community of faith, they experience the faith around them. Their first learnings about Christ are not from words as such, but from things they experience in connection with those words. Why do we have Cradle Roll? Do those kids understand any of the words? Come on, come on, come on. They're teaching and learning, but what are they doing there? Are they really learning? Donna, tell me, why do we have Cradle Roll? They are mimicking, they're learning, they're experiencing that teacher's faith. They are experiencing the love of God and Christ through that teacher because they feel the love, they feel the acceptance of being there. They feel the care, and they come to know this place of learning and worship as a place of love. These kids are experiencing faith. That's the first thing that they are doing. This is why we are urged to be not just hearers, but doers of the word, because people around us are experiencing what they're experiencing, our faith. This stage or style of faith is not relegated just to this age. Think, if you will, of a 80-year-old unbeliever who all of a sudden finds themselves living in, moving in with a Christian daughter and her family. This unbeliever may be experiencing faith for the first time in their life. See how it's not relegated to an age period? This person may move into a situation where they are experiencing someone else's faith. Hopefully it grows from there, and usually it will, if people experience enough faith in a community of believers of some kind, whether that is a church, whether that's a family, or some other kind of setting, then they will most generally move on to what we would call the next stage or style, and that is called affiliative faith. This is faith's childhood. If the first one was infancy, this is faith's childhood. During this time, the believer, whatever age they are, is beginning to affiliate with these people that they have been experiencing. They are affiliating with the group. They are affiliating with the beliefs of that group. It's very important during this stage for them to have a feeling of belonging. They want to act with that group now, not just experience them, but they want to act with them. They need to have this feeling of belonging. They want to feel needed, accepted, like there is at least some group within the community that they are a part of and that they are missed from when they are absent. They are affiliating with this group. During this period of time, the intellect is one of the less important things to the believer. The heart and what we would call the affect, the emotions, the appealing to the heart and the arts even, is what this believer is looking for. They really aren't engaging so much into what they're believing. They just know they like belonging to this group and feeling like they have a place and a part and that they belong here and would be missed if they were gone. But it's really dominated by their heart and their emotions. It's important at this time for the group itself to have some sort of identity so that the believer has an identity that they're grabbing onto. It's important for us, and I realize this in studying for this lesson, how important it is for us to share our restoration roots with our children. We have a story and a heritage and an identity, at least among churches of Christ, to share, and an identity that's not true. We have a little one entertaining us. I couldn't figure out what the noise was for a moment, but that's fine. That little one is experiencing the faith in this room, and I'm so glad that he or she is here. Anyway, during affiliative faith, whenever that happens, whatever the age group is, the believer is trying to identify with a particular group. What's sad is that many, many believers never progress beyond this particular stage or style of faith. They get stuck here, and I'm not saying it's necessarily their fault. I'm just saying, as a matter of fact, many people get stuck here. They belong to a group. This is what they've known. This is all they've known, perhaps. And they get comfortable belonging. And they never grow, if you will, beyond this affiliative faith. They may come up with questions about what they've been taught, but if they're uncomfortable dealing with those, they may tune them out, turn them off, and choose not to ask the questions because that's uncomfortable for them, and they get stuck in affiliative faith. Let me go on with a couple of other stages, and then we'll go back to my life and where I was and that kind of thing. Hopefully, if a person has experienced faith and then affiliated themselves with a group, there will come a time when the intellect starts kicking in. You know, the heart has gotten kind of full, and the intellect starts kicking in, and they say, but why do we do this, or do we believe this? Or when I'm reading, I'm just not so sure that this way, the way I've been taught all of my life, is really what this passage says. It kind of says something different to me. I'm just not so sure. This is a stage or style that you might, it's called searching faith. You might easily identify it with adolescence, but that's not necessarily when it happens. But it is an adolescent style of searching and even rebellion. We kind of accept that as part of our society and in our families, that that's going to happen with our teenagers, that that is a stage that they move through, and that it's an important one for them to have their own identity. They have to kind of question the identity that they've had within a family. But we need to see and accept the fact that that is also a very important stage for a believer to go through. To go through a period of searching. These are some things that characterize the searching believer. There is doubt. There is critical judgment. They can be very, very critical of what's going on around them. There is a desire to do some experimentation in order to test their own beliefs. They want to know what somebody else believes, what someone else does, and this is a way of testing what they have known during their lives. And the book says there is a desire to in them to commit, and I wrestled with this when I said that doesn't make sense to me. If they're searching and flitting from one idea to the next and not sure, why does there this desire to commit? But the truth is they're searching and wanting to grab a hold of something. They're just not quite sure what it's going to be. They have a tremendous desire to commit, but it may seem real fickle because one week it's over here, and the next week they've been presented with another idea and they're committing to over here. And the next week it might be this cause, and then someone else talks to them, and the next month they may be over here. But it's because they really want to find those roots and a cause to be behind, but they are not sure where they're going to land with it yet. So there is this desire to commit to something. Many times, believers that have entered into this stage, unfortunately, may be labeled as troublemakers. Can you see why that would happen? Even as unbelievers, because of the doubts they may express. And it's unfortunate. But we need to remember that in Acts 17, of the Bereans, it says that they were more noble-minded than those in Thessalonica, for they received the word with great eagerness, but they examined the scriptures daily to see whether these things were so. So they weren't going to swallow it hook, line, and sinker. They were ready to search and to make sure, and this was considered to be a noble-minded thing. So let's give these kind of believers some space to be noble. It's possible to get stuck here also. It's possible to get stuck in a mode of questioning and always searching and never drawing any conclusions and coming to them. And there are two or three possibilities that happen here. This kind of person can turn into a spiritual hypochondriac, because nothing seems right. Sometimes anger sets in. This person may live their life or a big part of it in anger because of the unsettledness of their life, the searching that's going on. But it can be a very unsettling time, and many people can get stuck here. Now, the last stage or style of faith is what Westerhoff calls owned faith. Lynn Anderson calls it faith's adulthood. And hopefully, if you've had the chance to experience faith and you've had the chance to affiliate with a group or some people or a family in a faithing kind of way, and then you've even had the opportunity and the chance and the freedom to question and search the way you've been raised or what you've been told, then hopefully at some point you do come to conclusions and you do find what you believe, because you believe it from the text itself, and you come to a point where you own your own faith, and it's no longer the faith of the community, the faith of the family, the faith of your church or your grandparents or whoever that might be. You come to a point where that faith is your own. Many times historically we call this conversion, but I think many times what we tend to call conversion is not at this point. I think truthfully this is real conversion when a person comes to a point where their faith is in actuality their own. When it happens, no matter whether it takes a long time or a short time, whether it's a real dramatic thing that just kind of finally happens in their life, whether it's very undramatic and is a slow growing process, when it happens, when a faith becomes someone's own, it will show. There are major changes in that person's life, their attitude, and it affects all of their life. They may still search and have questions and doubt, but it's dealt with in a completely different way. There is a peace that comes to that person when they have found their own faith and a place to hang their faith and their belief system. There is spiritual health in actuality for that person. There is a liberation from what they've been carrying. There's a wholeness of life. They now have their own identity, and it may be even separate and apart, hopefully separate and apart from their community. They have their own identity, and they're now able to stand up for what they believe because they believe it. And even if that means standing up against the community that they were raised in for whatever reason, they have the ability to do that because they've internalized this and gone through the struggle in order to get there. They now have the ability to live in the world but not of the world because they have a comfort and a peace in their own identity and their own faith. They can now meet the demands of the gospel. Now, let me continue with my life story. When I was in my late 20s, I had had both of my daughters at this point, several years obviously into marriage, several years into marriage and ministry. There was a young man that I need to write, come to think about it, and tell him what an impact he had on my life, because at one time when we were in youth ministry, he was one of our kids, okay? But in later years, he was the youth minister where we were. And in a class, he presented the material that I just presented to you. And it clicked in my head. My faith is not my own. My faith has never been my own. Again, I was in my late 20s. I was the preacher's wife. That's the way Terry introduced me last night. The preacher's wife. But think back about what I've already told you about my life. I was what? Raised in the church. I had experienced faith. I had affiliated myself with a group and with a heritage very comfortably. But when did I ever really search that out for myself? Did I go through a period of time like in college, like some kids do, and kind of reject and test and go full circle? No. What did I do? I married the Bible student and became a minister's wife immediately. And that faith that I had affiliated for all these years with my family and my heritage now belonged to my husband. And I was affiliated with him. And I was a preacher's wife, and I had an identity. But I see how I was still just kind of transferred that affiliation from one thing to the other. Now, when does the preacher's wife rebel? How does the preacher's wife rebel? How does the preacher's wife doubt? Question. Does she stop going to worship for a period of time? No, that will likely cause a livelihood problem for her family. When I came to realization, Ron Johns Jr. is the young man that I'm talking about that taught this material. Again, I need to write him. He has no idea what a life-changing thing it was for me, but I still had a ways to go. I had an intellectual understanding now of what was going on because it clicked in that class. I thought, I know what he's talking about. This is why the passion is not there. This is not my own. I've never made it my own. I've never had the chance or taken the chance or made the chance or whatever happened to make it my own. But again, even having that intellectual understanding, what was I going to do about it? I didn't know what I was going to do about it. How was I going to go through a rebellious time? How was I going to search out my faith? Well, I carried on with this intellectual understanding for several more years, knowing all along that this was the problem, but not having any ability, seemingly, to take care of it. And then the Lord stepped in, and this is what happened. My husband decided that the work he was doing as an education minister at the time was not his passion, and it's really not. He had a passion to preach and to minister to people, and the administrative duties of an education minister were not his thing. Well, that's another story. Suffice it to say that his own example was, he said, I would need a second grade teacher. And I would go to recruit a second grade teacher because I'm the minister of education. And I would go to Sister So-and-so and I would listen to her story and listen to her passion for babies. And I would make a place for her in the cradle role because his ministry heart wanted to minister to this person and not fill the slot for the second grade teacher, you know. That's his story. But anyway, he began searching for a place then to go back into pulpit ministry rather than this administrative job. And for the first time in many years, he was not in school. And so we didn't draw a circle on the map and say, okay, Lord, as long as it's within driving distance of this school, we'd been at OCC, ACU, and he'd done graduate work twice there, and then he'd gone to Southwestern Seminary to get his doctorate. We had to go to Fort Worth to do that. But anyway, for the first time in our lives, we didn't draw a circle on the map and say, Lord, it's got to be within so many miles of this school, but we'll minister wherever you want us to. Instead, we said, Lord, wherever you want us to go, we will go. Gulp. I've thought back and forth as I prepared this whether to tell you exactly where I went, because that really has nothing to do with it except that we went a long way from the Bible Belt. We ended up in Northern California, but please don't label Californians the way people back here tend to label Californians. They really aren't all bad. Most of them are transplanted Okies. We went to Northern California. We went with partial support to a very small little congregation that wanted to grow, and we felt like we had found a ministry place where we could help. And initially, things went real well. I did find myself pulled into teaching women. I'd never had the real chance to do that before. I was leading some small group studies in the week. I'm not sure exactly how it happened. Orchestrated it. I taught the books of Hebrews and Romans. And if you know anything about those books, you know how foundational they are to our belief system, to Christianity as a whole. During that time, there was a tremendous amount of intellectual growth that happened in me. I came to a knowledge during that time, a real understanding for myself about grace, and about God's gift to me, and about his call to me to respond to that gift, and not to be burdened with a whole list of do's and don'ts, and works and things that I had to do, but but to respond to his love for me, and I finally understood that for myself. During that period of time, too, I also had two very dear friends. If they ever hear this tape, their names were Joy and Barbara. They came from very divergent places. I mean, the three of us came from very, very different places in life. And we all had different questions. We were questioning different things. We had different struggles. But we met together on a regular basis, too. And we were able to be vulnerable with each other. And we questioned things to each other and had the ability to do that and to say off-the-wall things because we were comfortable with each other and to say, well, you know, I've always thought this, but, you know, lately I've been thinking this, you know, way over here. And we had the ability to do that. So during that time, there was a tremendous amount of growth. But let me tell you a little bit about the ministry there. You know, whenever you go into a small place, and typically when growth starts to happen, what does that do to the people that have been there? When new people come in and the congregation starts to get a little bigger, and are they real comfortable? No. No. They wanted to grow. I think in their heads they wanted to grow. In their hearts, I'm not so sure. They were real uncomfortable. As the growth started to happen, there was a tremendous discomfort. Pretty soon, the discomfort kind of grows, and it turns many times into distrust. And it came about that my husband and I both of us directly became the brunt of that distrust. And, you know, after several months, that distrust had grown into outright paranoia. It was like we could do nothing right. Everything we said was questioned. Our motives were off the wall. And within 18 months of moving from Fort Worth to Northern California, our ministry blew up in our faces. And we were umpteen jillion miles away from family and the Bible Belt and support and that kind of thing. You know what happened, though? I wasn't a preacher's wife any longer. For a little while. But the two factors coming together in my life, the tremendous growth and that I experienced teaching, and then the heartache and struggle of having a ministry that fails, as it were, I know that God was using it for good in my life. There weren't many things good. I have a daughter here who will tell you there were many things bad about that situation, and she is bearing a lot of the repercussions today from that situation. But I can tell you that for me, the outcome was owned faith and a true conversion, if you will. As things kind of fell apart for us financially, I began cleaning houses. How many of you have done that? Almost everybody I talk to has cleaned houses sometime or another in their life. That's just always been something. One day, through all this struggle, through all this doubting, I mean, because I really did finally doubt. I mean, what was this church thing that God created? Why did he create this church thing only to have ugly people in it? And, you know, people that were ugly to you and you know. I really never doubted God. Somehow I hung on to that. And I know some people, I mean, even go that far. But for me personally, I never really doubted that. But it was all this other stuff he'd planned. The church, our interaction with each other, you know. God, I'd be glad to have a relationship with you and Jesus, but leave these other people out of it. It's kind of where I was. But cleaning houses. I lost my train of thought there for a moment. I was going through that tremendous struggle and hurt. And yet it was coming together for me. And you can think me off the wall if you want to or weird, but it was literally on my knees in front of somebody else's toilet that it crashed in on me and I sobbed. I cried. Luckily, I was alone in this lady's house. I cried for a good long while because it all came together. All of a sudden, I was very well aware of sin and that I was a sinner and in need of salvation and redemption. And yet now I knew where the grace was because I understood that. I knew where to find it. And it all came together. I told a therapist later, I said, I was on the floor in front. He goes, that's when it happens. He was a Christian man. He said, he'd heard stranger things anyway. Many times it's in a lowly kind of thing like that, what we think of as a lowly kind of thing, that we are humbled and that we realize our state before God. And it all comes together. I believe I was at that point 35 years old. I had been baptized when? At 12. But in many ways, hear me, hear my heart. In many ways, I feel like I became a Christian at 35, kind of, sort of. Now, the faith stages and styles, we could debate all day about whether one is better than the other, whether one is just a step to the other, whether that's even true, and that's all kind of man's thinking and what have you. I can just tell you that for me, it was, and I perceive that it is a progression. I do feel like that there are times we jump back and forth. We'll find ourselves in one place, and we jump back to the other, and we're searching one time, and we own it one time, and there's another time when all we want to do is just belong someplace. Who cares? You know, we just want to belong. But that is kind of what happened to my faith and my struggle. I heard a speaker just the other day that brought salvation down to a couple words for me that I'm gonna grab onto. If you know Marsha Lightsey, and or if she's here or hears this tape, Marsha, I'm gonna grab the two words. But she said, she used the terms grace and gratitude. And to me, that's what our Christianity is. There is grace, there is God's grace, and then our response to that, everything we do, our repentance, our baptism, our confession, our life from then on, everything we do is in gratitude for that grace. So I'm adopting those words as kind of my little theme, grace and gratitude. I have these exhortations to you today. I think I've got about 5 more minutes. Are you stuck somewhere in the progression? Is your faith still just, I don't mean to demean where you might be. Please hear my heart, because I was there for a lot of years. But are you stuck, affiliated with a group that you've never known any different? Have you ever thought it through? Have you ever searched out what you've been taught all of your life and made it your own? Have you ever questioned it? Even if you come right back to where you are, and you may, or you may not. Have you done that? Are you stuck there? You know, we talk about, Jesus talked about being childlike, but the context of that was humility. When the disciples came to him and said, "Who's the greatest? Who's the greatest?" And he brought the child, but he said, "Humble yourself like this child." And that was his point. Humble yourself like this child to be acceptable in the kingdom. But there are other passages. 1 Corinthians 14:20 says, "Brethren, do not be children in your thinking. Yet in evil be babes, but in your thinking be mature." There is an exhortation to grow up and to progress beyond where you might be or where you could have been as a child or even a childlike believer. Be patient with yourself. You heard my story. It was a lot of years coming together. But continue to look for that way and that time that you can do your doubting and your searching. It will be different for you than for me. Are you stuck in the next stage, in the searching faith stage? I talked about that a little bit. 2 Timothy 3 says, "In the last days, difficult times will come." I'm leaving out some verses. "But men will be always learning and never able to come to a knowledge of the truth." Are you always searching out something and never seeming to be able to come to any conclusions? Come to some conclusions, or you're just going to be floating out there. The problem with never coming to any conclusions is that pretty soon you'll find that you are unable to believe intensely in much of anything, because you've never brought anything down and made it your own. And floating out there, not being able to come to those conclusions, will result that way. There are some repercussions for people that aren't allowed to search. As I said, they can get very mad and they can stay mad. So I want to exhort you to allow people around you to search and to doubt if they need to. And I don't want you, if you are kind of stuck in this mode, to blame a repressive situation. Maybe it's the church, maybe it's your parents, you know, that they haven't allowed you to think anything different. You're going to have to take responsibility for that, and I exhort you to do that. Take responsibility for your own searching, and don't blame anyone or anything else for that. As I mentioned earlier, are you doing Christianity in front of other people so that they can experience and affiliate with you? I urge you to do that. Are you allowing yourself to search and to doubt, or does that scare you? Do you repress those questions and kind of tune them out because it scares you? Does it scare you to go into a deep Bible study? Do you avoid them because you're scared of the ideas you might be presented with? I'm telling you, or trying to clue you into the fact that you're avoiding something that's very necessary for faith growth, and I urge you to do that. I reviewed my title. Terry Rush actually worded my title, but it sounded good at the time. It seems a little harsh, and I think it is a little harsh. I'm not saying that if it's not your own faith that you have nothing to share, but I can tell you from my perspective that in order to have the real information and the motivation together with it to share to someone, you really need your own faith. As long as I was hanging on to affiliative faith, I was scared to death of talking to other people about my faith. I had no real confidence in my own faith or being able to share it because it wasn't my own. But having gone through the searching process, then it is your own. So I urge you to do that as well. By coming into your own faith, then you can have full confidence in your salvation, real feeling in your worship when you go there. I've learned that I can even ignore the slow song because I'm more tuned in to what I'm doing. Now, I'm not saying it works every time, but for the most part, I'm able to ignore some of those irritations in worship and just focus in on what I'm trying to do, and that it's really worshiping God is what I want to do, regardless of how it's being handled. Focus into what I'm doing, and it's really, really helped. There's a greater passion in your service, and as I've already said, a greater motivation to share your faith to others around you. I was given a suggestion as to how I should end this, and I'm going to do it, because there's a good crowd here today. Would you stand and sing with me, "I Stand in Awe"? Thank you for being here today.
You are beautiful beyond description, too marvelous